We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on Blue Chip Speakers, NABA.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Michael's coming back to give us an update. He did such a great job last time. I don't want to put too much pressure on him. But he did bring his sponsor, and I know he did what he needed to do to make this journey up to the podium. So, come on, Michael. Everybody give him a big hand, please.
Hello, everybody. My name is Michael, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 24, 2009. I'm a member of the Heavy Hitters group. And brought back a lot of old feelings and emotions being here. This was like a kindergarten for me. And it feels really good to walk up to people and for people to say to you, it's good to see you. It wasn't always like that. I was born and raised in Chicago. I am the youngest of 10 children. And, of course, like everybody else, you know, I grew up with dysfunction and chaos in the family and everything. Abusive father, parents split. And I'm not going to take a lot of time and go into a big drunkalogue. What I'm going to attempt to do is to make a connection with what the big book talks about and the things that I went through now looking back. I was the kind of guy who glorified gang violence. I saw a lot of violence, fist fights. You know, it wasn't a lot of shootings and drive-bys back then. Excuse me. It was like I lived in the jungle. If anybody can imagine or relate to what I'm talking about, you know, low income area. There wasn't a lot of anything available, you know, but I didn't know any better. You know, I was forced to do a lot of things I didn't want to do. You know, I joined a gang, you know, because I wanted to fit in. You know, I have so many stories just about the dysfunction and the chaos that I really don't even know where to start, but I'm gonna try. I was the kind of person that I started using alcohol and drugs at an early age, like 16. Dropped out of school because I thought I knew better. You know, that whole piece about I thought I knew everything. I had no idea what I was setting myself up for. And, like everybody else, you know, I mean, when I took my first drink or my first drug, you know, I loved it, you know, and then everything about it, you know, just appealed to me. I didn't want to do anything else, you know, but to drink, get high. Then that caused me to start lying to people, being dishonest. It was just a train wreck, you know. It was really bad. I did a lot of things like what the big book talked about. You know, I moved from place to place, you know, never realizing that I always took me with me. And never realizing why I couldn't have healthy relationships with people, keep jobs. I always wanted to run the show. I just had it really rough, you know. So then from Chicago, I moved to California, where I started doing other things more hardcore. And I lived there for about 7 years. And of course, I didn't make, you know, friends there either. I remember one time I got a job, and I was supposed to be working overnight at a gas station. And I didn't even show up. Brand new gas station. The guy had like introduced me to his friends around the city and stuff, and I didn't even show up. But I had to mitigate it gall a couple days later to call him and ask him, did I still have an opportunity to work for him? Well, I'll let you guys figure out what he said to me. So then, you know, I mean, it was just a lot of that kind of stuff, you know. So then, you know, I moved to Georgia, and my mother's health was failing and stuff. And my mom passed away in March of 2000. And, you know, again, I mean, I never, like, knew what AA was all about. I never, like, came in and picked up a white chip. I just had no idea that this beautiful society lived or existed. When my mom passed away, you know, I just had waves of, like, I would just go into that whole thing, and then I would slow down and stop for a little while and stuff like that. And, you know, it was like the disease just latched on to whatever was there, the power of the addiction. It didn't matter what it was, you know. Until, say, July 2009, something happened probably 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I was finishing up with what I was doing, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a spiritual awakening. I don't know if it was a defining moment. I don't know what it was, but I'm glad that it happened. A power greater than me intervened in my life and showed me a series of like my life in like PowerPoint, you know, with the last image of me being in the casket, you know. And that was it for me. First bus that was running at about 5 o'clock in the morning, I went to Grady Hospital, and I went up to the 13th floor, you know. And I knew it had to be a power greater than myself, because we're talking about a real alcoholic, junk addict, junkie, dope fiend type person, wanting more but dope, wanting more to drink, and then in an instant, just wanting help. Like, this is not right. I shouldn't be doing this. You know, and all the while, looking back, I never thought that I hurt anyone else, because I was the one putting the poison inside of my body. But that wasn't true. I'll get to that in a little bit. I met this gentleman on the 13th floor, and the funniest thing happened. You know, I went to speak to him. No words came out of my mouth, but plenty of tears came out of my eyes. And he said to me, I know exactly what you're saying. And then my recovery began from there. You know, I prayed and I asked God that I thought I knew. I really didn't have a solid concept of God. You know, it's kind of hard to have a solid concept of God when you're pouring a bunch of booze and dope on top of spirituality. That tends to cloud things. And, you know, he granted my wish, you know. I was in a halfway house for probably about a month and a half, 2 months at the most. And then that's when I came up to Napa here for the first time. And there was a guy that saw me out front. And he just walked up to me. He asked me, he said, "How you doing, man?" I said, "I'm all right. Things could be better, you know." And little did I know, you know, my recovery began right there on the front steps of Napa, right out here. He took me to this group. It's a rigid group. You know, the guys were, they looked intimidating, you know, but their hearts were full of love, because that's all they had ever shown me, even when I didn't think that's what it was, you know. And they taught me a lot about self-awareness, you know, the difference between cash register honesty, gut level honesty. You guys have to remember, I lived like an animal for a really long time. So I had to stay sober for these concepts to take hold inside of me. And, you know, that's those values, that process began. And there were many times I wanted to leave, you know, but it was like, that's all I've ever done was run away. You know, it had to come a time where I had to stand and fight, you know, stand for something. My mom used to always say, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. You know, so it was time to stand. You know, and these guys began, you know, helping me out, showing me how they stay sober one day at a time, you know. And there's a lot of people around here that don't agree with the way that they do things. But personally, I really don't care, because those guys helped me. I spent my first 2 years in sobriety with that group. And I owe them a debt that I cannot repay. And so, you know, probably 2 or 3 weeks, no drinking, no nothing. I started inquiring about trying to get a job. You know, I immediately wanted to start fixing everything, wanted to start putting everything back together. And they told me, they said, "Really? You almost killed yourself out there. You need to go to meetings all day, every day. That's all you need to do." You know, people complain about 90 meetings in 90 days. I did 5 to 7 meetings a day for 90 days. You do the math. So within my first 6 months, I did well over 500 meetings. And then they told me, start talking to people. Not the same way that you did when you used to be out there, but start talking to people in the sense of, you know, how they're doing. You know, they started instilling these actions that the big book talks about, you know, getting out of self. And it was hard to do, because anytime I approached someone, it was always about what can I get from you, you know. And my only purpose for apologizing for you was so that I could set you up for the next time. See, I didn't understand the truth and honesty and the gut levelness that AA offers. You know, and, you know, it was just a lot of that type of stuff, you know. And, you know, I began to sponsor guys. You know, I've always wanted to go in on like a 12-step and that type of stuff. And once those actions just, you know, kicked in and got down inside of me, it wasn't too bad. It was actually better than what I was doing. You know, at times, you know, it was like I was just on the verge of having a meltdown, you know. Then it was time to leave that group. And when I spoke to someone and asked them would they be my sponsor at another group. And he said, yeah, he would. And like his first action he had me to do was to highlight the sentence and write it down in the big book of all the must. Try that. Go from the forward to page 164. Find the sentence with the word must in it. Highlight it and write it down. I went through that book about 7 or 8 times. Because I was willing. I was willing to do something different than how I had been living. You know, I stuck around and kept coming around just long enough, you know, praying that something would change. I always wanted more time than what I had. People said, Mike, you're right where you need to be at the right time. You're right where you need to be. You know, I wanted 20 years. You know, because I came in and said, you guys laughing and having a good time and living good lives. There was no chaos. You know, there was no confusion to a certain degree. But I just couldn't believe that all of that mess that I had did, that God could just forgive me so quickly. And see, that's the beauty of it. You know, the big book tells us that your higher power is all loving, all powerful. There's no limit to his forgiveness or his love. So then his next action was he had me to go up to the heavy hitters on the meeting on group night and stand by the door and shake each and every individual's hand that walked in there. He even gave me a script of what to say. And it goes as such. Hey, how are you? Great to see you. Thank you for coming. I said that a lot that day. And, you know, just those simple tasks like that, you know, it showed my sponsor that I was willing to go to any length to stay sober. At first, you know, that whole thinking thing kicked in. You know, he's just messing with me. But what he was doing, he was showing me love. Showing me a better way to live. And then we came to the step work. Step one, he had me to write down all the ways that my life was unmanageable and how I was powerless in every way. And I mean, I didn't really have anything to gauge that off of. I'd never done any step work before, so I did it, you know. And and it wasn't too bad. Then step two was Bain Lee. We went through the big book, the 12 and 12, and to show that I can't, but that he could. Step three, said a prayer. And then, you know, this step four that everybody made a big deal about. My sponsor told me, he said, all you're doing is making a list. That's all you're doing. And he was really good at always calming me down. You know, he's a little fella and I'm a big guy, but he just talks so mellow. He just had that charisma about him, you know, and I believed him. And I made the list. And it was horrible revisiting all those things. I was told, you know, you say the prayer, then you make the list. You know, I was given the guidelines on how to do that. And it was quite possibly the hardest thing I had ever had to do. But I did it. It was searching and it was fearless because I had screwed over a lot of people. I just want to say real quick, I only picked up one white chip, but it took me 24 years to get it. So, you know, I'm saying I was a nasty dude to a lot of people for a long time. The hit was step five, admitting to God, to yourself and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. See, that's when my alcoholism was addressed violently. It was at a spiritual retreat. I did step five with my sponsor at a spiritual retreat. That was sweet. And I mean, I can't say enough about the hitters. I can't say enough about AA. You know, I can't say enough about the spiritual principles and stuff, you know. Step six, there was more book work. You know, there was more, going over all of that stuff. I mean, I had brought a thing so thick, my sponsor was like, look at all this BS. It's just redundant. You know, you did the same thing to everybody. I mean, come on, man. So, I mean, it was, I said that to say, you know, it was like, you know, I had that king baby syndrome, you know. I didn't get my way, you know. So then, you know, I would pick up my toys and I'd stomp out the sandbox and go home. You know, not allowing people to be who they are. Accept them for where they're at. Pray for them and stay out of their process. I want to share something with you all that, I mean, like, the program really, really came through for me. But I had to work it every day and every night. Within 1 year, I had lost 2 brothers. I was in the midst of doing my step 8, my amends. It was January 19th, 2013. I got the information of where my brother was living in Chicago. He was living in a assisted living scenario. And I called them only to find out that he had died December 10th, 2012. You know, so I don't really know what hurt me the worst. The fact that I didn't get a chance to make an amends or that he died alone. You know, a lot of things that had haunted me and taunted me. A lot of things I carried around grudgingly, you know, in my heart. During that 2 or 3 week process, my acceptance had grew. So did my forgiveness, because I had answers to the questions. It was almost like God said, okay, now you're ready here. Maybe he knew I couldn't have handled all of that stuff before. My last brother just died last month this was December 22nd, 2013. He died from complications due to diabetes. He was a big guy. He had been going through surgery for a really long time. And I was more worried about my sister-in-law. They had been married 32 years. Could you imagine? 32 years is a long time to be committed to anything. You know? And then, you know, I felt the urge, like I wanted to drink, you know? All of that. You know, because there was other things going on that I had no control over. All I had to do was just keep doing what I knew worked. And that's just doing my daily routine. You know, saying my prayers in the morning, being as nice to everybody as I can, focusing on each individual contact that I made with people, you know, and at night looking over my day and making sure, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, asking God to remove the malice from my heart and from my mind and to make me a better man tomorrow than I was today. And it paid dividends when it needed to. So, you know, I'm not in control of that. But if I do what I'm supposed to do, then the program and the spirituality will kick in just like it's supposed to. No one told me that. I've experienced it. So, I did what was suggested, you know. I went to remember page 84. I asked God to remove that from me at once. I got on the phone and I talked to some people. And I immediately started thinking about someone I can help. It didn't say that I had to help someone. All I had to do was think about it. The person I talked to on the phone, It's like, yeah, man, you know, it's kind of rough and stuff like that. But I was like, you know, I told the disease, okay, if I take a drink right now, would that bring my brother back? No, it won't. Will it change all those outside circumstances? No, it won't. The only thing that changes is my sobriety date. You know, and everybody that, you know, look for me to do the right thing will say, you know, I'll be stereotyped. You know, I didn't want to be that guy. So I'm kind of all over the place. I'm a little nervous. I had a fan. He left and went somewhere. I don't know where he went. I'm kind of sad now. But So at this last retreat, you know, I finished up the steps with my sponsor, the maintenance steps, you know, 10, 11, and 12. It's time to do some service. I'm living a life that I couldn't have never imagined, you know. I'll never forget that day, what happened, you know, when I went from doing all the things I was doing, wanting more, like this just an overwhelming obsession to want more. And then in an instant, this isn't right. I need help. I gotta find some help. It was awesome. I've experienced a lot of awesome things in recovery. I even started saying the word awesome. I never used to say awesome. But awesome is just what it is, awesome. I remember when I first started coming to meetings here, and Miss Julie used to chair the 9:30 in the room over there, and Tinsley would be in there with his golden locks, curls and stuff, you know, just being Tinsley. And it was wild because I couldn't remember names, I couldn't remember topics. And then when I went to share, Julie was like, yeah, baby. That's nice, baby. We're going to wait 6 more months before you can talk, okay? This was an awesome place. It's always been. I remember I went to a drunk-a-thon here, something like consecutive meetings, whatever that thing is called, and I remember Miss Jackie cooked something of a seafood medley, and it was just wonderful. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like Napa has some awesome food, yeah. Good hospitality, and that Saturday morning breakfast, and I was like, man, they know how to feed a drunk in here. Yeah, you know, I'm from Chicago. You know, I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy. You know, they'll get with it down there. I mean, I've just had really good experiences at this place. There's lots of things that stick out that my sponsor and I went through in the big book. And one of the things that was really powerful among many was in the one chapter when it says nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. So then he summarized it as, well, if nothing happened by mistake, then maybe we should look at this as a learning curve. And that made plenty of sense to me because Clarence Snyder says that we're the only ones that can talk to our own kind. Like a person that doesn't have a problem with addiction, what can they really tell us? I mean, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but it's the truth. And Triangle was another place I went to a lot, 8111. But there is nothing like a spiritual retreat. I've been to the Atlanta Men's Workshop, and I've been to the Heavy Hitters Retreat. And there's a nice little thing that goes on out there. You know, we'll travel outside of the facility and go to a restaurant. And it's like the people that run the place know our people by first name. Just blew me away. It's like, okay, so how is so-and-so doing? I mean, this program is just giving me so many things that I can't imagine. You know, it's one of those things where you have to experience it for yourself. Every day is not going to be a good day. It's just not. You know, I don't want to make it sound like I got this whole thing, because I don't. You know, there's still some mornings where I have to wake up and like look around and see where I'm at. And I have almost 5 years sober. You know, but it's all about, you know, just keep doing what the program suggests that you do. You know, I had to rely on somebody else's experience, somebody else's thinking, you know, because actions based off of my own thinking landed me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. But, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, well, you know, it's because of the drink and blah, 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 X, Y, Z. No, that's not it. There was something fundamentally wrong with me before I ever picked up a drink or a drug, you know. And the literature says that we are beyond human aid. So what that says to me is that only God can help me if I seek Him. You know? This talk just did not go the way I wanted it to go tonight, you know. I didn't want to come in here with cube cards and a book and all of that. You know, I kind of wanted to shoot from the hip, you know. But I hope at least one person got something out of what I wanted to say. But I do would like to end with this, you know. I now have, since I've been in recovery, I got my GED in 2012. I am currently a student at George Piedmont Technical College, going for a 2-year degree. Going for a 2-year degree in early childhood development. I have 2 jobs. Like, who would ever thought that I would have been that responsible to have 2 jobs? You know, but I'm still a work in progress, you know. It's like I said, you know, I don't have this thing. You know, all I have to do is just stick close to my sponsor and the people that love me and call my network and work the program and not my program. It's a big difference. Somebody says, say it again. I have to work the program, not my program. You guys have been great. Thanks.
If the river keep a rising, water gonna overflow. If that river keep a rising, flood water gonna overflow. Just like that old river, baby, it's my time to go.